Today's episode is supported by Chitalia. And you can discover the real Italy with Chitalia because they are the UK's leading Italian holiday specialists. They have been helping guests discover the best of Italy for 95 years. Today's episode with Yolanda Edwards is in many ways a love letter to Italy. She has moved to Rome and tells us about why and how much she loves it. And her all-time favourite hotel is on the Tuscan coast. If you're tempted to book your own trip, then Chitalia's team of Italy experts can help make that happen. They are there to create your perfect stay. All bookings are backed by Chitalia's Travel with Confidence promise, which gives a refund guarantee, free amendments and free cancellation up to 3 weeks before departure. So go on, discover the real Italy with Chitalia, the UK's leading Italian holiday specialists. Head to chitalia.com, that's C-I-T-A-L-I-A.com, to find out more. Thank you to Chitalia. Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm your host, journalist Holly Rubinstein, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. On today's episode, I'm joined by a titan of the travel industry, Yolanda Edwards. Formerly the creative director of Condé Nast Traveler in the US, Yolanda went on to launch the critically acclaimed YOLO Journal, a quarterly travel lifestyle magazine which showcases real finds from interesting people around the world, not just industry insiders. It's accompanied by a weekly newsletter, which is a huge favourite among in-the-know travel lovers and which I thoroughly recommend. She also has a prestigious title of US and Canada Academy Chair for the world's 50 best hotels. As a hotel enthusiast, I found it very interesting to hear which properties stand out to her. And the story behind Yolanda falling in love with travel is a fascinating one that I didn't know before this chat. She had a very sheltered childhood, which she tells us more about on the episode, where travel really wasn't on the agenda. And it was a transformative cultural immersion program on a remote Greek island where Yolanda's innate curiosity and love for travel was truly ignited. And the rest you could say was history. Yolanda is now non-stop traveling the globe. Her travel diaries today take us on a grand tour around Europe through the highlights and hidden gems of Italy, France, Greece, and more. So fasten your seatbelts as we get set to explore the fascinating life and career of a true travel trailblazer. Let's get started. Yolanda Edwards, welcome to the Travel Diaries. It's so nice to see you. We've been trying to get this in the diary for a while. You've been trotting around the globe, as we would come to expect. But how are you? It's great to see you.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm so glad we finally got this on the books.
You're in Brooklyn at the moment, and you're recently back from a trip to Europe.
Yeah, I just came back last night. I've literally been here for 9 hours. Landed at JFK, came from Milan where I was at Salone del Mobile for a couple days, and I've been zigzagging around Europe.
Any standout spots on this trip?
One of the things I think happens when we travel is my husband and I both fall in love with wherever we go, and we end up like having these fantasies of, oh, let's look at real estate. And that happened to us in Rome. Our daughter was off to college and we didn't have to be in Brooklyn anymore. And so it became this like, well, what if we rented an apartment in Rome? And Rome is actually surprisingly well-priced for rentals. And the cost of living there is really, it's a fraction of what it is in New York. Also a fraction of what it is in many places in Europe. And so we just decided to do that 2 years ago. And I'd say we spend a third of our time we'll spend there. But we just recently got a new apartment. So we had to do the really boring move, packing, moving, unpacking, figuring everything out. It's definitely was one of those like great to do, but really a reminder of how on all these travels, I collect way too many things. And I need to really think that through. All of my like brocante finds become very, you don't realize when you have storage. We had great storage in the first apartment, and the second one doesn't have as much. And I'm like, oh my God, how did we accumulate this?
Well, at least you have a European base for that, and then you're not having to schlep it over the Atlantic every time.
Exactly. Yeah.
What was it about Rome that in particular, you know, made you want to put down some kind of roots there?
The thing that I realize I like about it so much is that it's really like a village. There's nothing to do there other than like, it's sort of like time really has stood still. And whereas, you know, just coming from Milan where there's so much going on and there's fashion shows and furniture fairs and there's so much that goes through Milan, and it really is like a vibrant, almost, I would say, modern city. Rome is the opposite of that. And so there's something about it. It's so calm and so not activating, where our life is so much about being on the road, going to events, meeting people, like, which is all very exciting. But to come back to somewhere where we can feel like we're a part of a neighborhood, it's slow. And the airport is incredible. And the drive to the airport is a half an hour, and it's always through some beautiful route. Every which way the driver takes us, we're like, never saw this before. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Whereas coming home from JFK, JFK is completely being reconstructed in certain terminals. It's a nightmare waiting 45 minutes just for the car to pick you up. Like, it's just a headache. And
yeah,
I feel like I've been really lucky to live in New York for, I guess it's almost 30 years, but it's time for us to like be in a different kind of slower, when we come home, home needs to be in a slower place.
Yeah, I totally get that. Right. Okay. So we're going to kick off your travel diaries now, Yolanda.
Great.
Starting at chapter one, and that is your earliest childhood travel memory.
So I did not grow up in a family that traveled. So a lot of people imagine that I just sort of have always been this way. And this is like, I grew up this way traveling, and this is just a continuation. And it's actually quite the opposite. It's more in a reaction to the lack of travel. My parents really, they were quite young when they had me, definitely lived very humbly. My dad's was a piano teacher, still is. My mom just liked sort of puttering around in the garden, but like they really enjoyed their life of being musical, being in nature, but like they weren't really seeking anything outside of the life that they had. But they were also, and still are, they're alive. They're incredibly religious. And the religion side of things for me as a kid was very intense. And I just, it wasn't like a, let's just go to church on Sunday sort of thing. Like they would bring people into the house a lot, that they were helping. There, you know, we always had people in our house that maybe were homeless, or they were really kind of almost like missionaries. And so for a young child, I just was like, okay, I know they're doing something good, but like, I need an escape from this. I need to know that like, there's something beyond just this, like these four walls. And and so the only travel we ever did was driving between where we lived, which was Washington State, and California, which is where my father's family lived.
Right.
And so we would drive down in the summertime, and we would often spend the night in a relative's house about midway through, because it's about 800 miles from Washington to the Bay Area. And sometimes though, my dad would say, maybe we should just push a little further than the city where we had relatives, and we'll just stay in a hotel, a motel, meaning motor drive up to it, right?
Yeah.
And I would get so excited. We'd be driving down the highway, and you'd see these like motel signs that were just like, you know, the big neon. And you could even see like this glow of swimming pools from the highway. And I would just beg, like, please, can we stamp one with a pool? So we would, you know, sometimes we would. And the idea of like staying in this place that was this other bed than the one that I always slept in, and this pool that was warm. I mean, we didn't have friends with pools. And then I would say, like, oh, can we get something like a soda from the machine? And we'd get like a lemonade from the machine, and just like the sound of like the soda pop can hitting the metal of the machine, and that like the ice, that you could have ice. All of those things were like so powerful for me, like the most transporting. Like I still always think about that feeling of like the beginning of wanderlust was like began with that glow of a swimming pool seen from the highway. It's really about otherness. And for me, that really is the beginning.
Wow. What an amazingly powerful picture. I can just transport myself into your world. And did they always kind of live up to your expectation when you got there? Like, were you always, you know, excited?
Yeah, because like, I mean, I didn't have anything to compare it against. And so for me, it was like, there was a pool. I got to swim in it. I got to have like sugary drinks that I never was allowed. and it was just like, and we weren't staying in some relative's house where it was like, you know, on a bed that had lots of dolls on it that had to be moved, you know, like some old aunt. Exactly.
And how about the contrast of Washington State to California going back and forth? Because those are quite differing environments, climates, topography.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like it was really always going from our house to a grandparent's house. And there was not a lot of discovery that was happening. I mean, opposite, right? I like couldn't imagine like taking that drive and not turning it into like a week because
an
I would
epic road trip.
Yeah, exactly. But they were just like, get to the grandparents' house. But like, I would say at a certain point, we went to Yosemite, and that was that was maybe some of our first trips, maybe the occasional camping trip. But it's just never really been a priority. And still to this day, my parents, they travel. But they traveled to do missions. So it's like my mom was just in Paris, but she was staying in the suburbs and helping like build a church in the suburbs of Paris. Or yeah, it's like they're the same. And I'm like, you know, it's they are always so amazed about like, how did this happen? I'm like, you know, we all become, we either follow in the footsteps or we become reactive in it, and we rebel, or we're just different. As I grew a little bit older, then I started to realize like friends I met in school, I'd go to their house. Their parents would have cookbooks, and they'd like actually think about, oh, let's cook this recipe. Like my parents were just, they just didn't think about all the things, like all the stuff that like seems so normal that you'd be like, so what are we going to make for dinner tonight? Well, let's consult online. Or my mom is more like, what do I have from the garden? And I'll cook something from that. But like, it's just not important to them to be so kind of considered about their choices. So, when I met these other friends and their parents who were like planning trips, planning what they were making for dinner that night, talking about a flea market they'd been to that weekend, and they had stuff. They had lots of accumulation from these travels or these places that they'd gone on the weekend and shop. And all of these sort of signifiers that were, for me, I was like, wow, like, I don't know people like that. So I sort of glommed on to friends whose parents were like really mentors to me. And and that's really where I think from there, the sort of travel bug really started.
And that's why your Rome apartment is now full of the Bracanti furniture.
You got it. This is like a therapy session.
We're working this all out.
Yeah, exactly.
We move on then, Yolanda, to chapter two, and that is the first place that you fell in love with. Where would that be?
Okay, the first place I fell in love with was Mykonos. Mm. My first trip to Europe, I was turning 16, and one of these families that I was friends with invited me to go on this trip with them. And they said, we'll meet up with you in Greece. They were going on some like cruise in the Mediterranean. And then they said, just get yourself to Athens. All you need to take care of is your flight and your spending money. We'll take care of everything else.
Amazing.
So I met up with them in Athens and we went to Mykonos, and I was there with my best friend we were both juniors in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I had never been to Europe before. I had no idea of what Greece would be like.
And a long way from Washington, from the West Coast as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. And once I got there, I started to kind of put two and two together. Like, I think this is where the locations were for some of the photos that I had put up on my wall. Like, there were all these beautiful, like, Calvin Klein ads that were so pretty, shot in black and white with this light that was just incredible. And when I got to Greece, I was like, I think that's the light that I've been in love with, but didn't know where it came from. I mean, who knows? It could have been Spain, but for me, it seemed like it was Greece. And so we get to Mykonos, and besides it being beautiful and the beaches being great, and I mean, this is just to set it up, this is 1985. Mm-hmm. So Mykonos is a very different place than it is today. And so we would go out at night and walk into the town. So it was this kind of international, but like, people who were, I mean, I had never seen drag queens mixing with like banker types, mixing with, like, it was this confluence of all races, all types of people, no judgment. And I was like, coming from this very religious background, I was like, this is paradise. And so then after that week in Mykonos, and then I had the most incredible sort of like European tour with his family. But for the next summer, when I was graduating from high school, I rented an apartment back in Mykonos. And the way I rented an apartment back then is I saw in the New York Times, there was like a little classified that was like apartments in Greece, you know, send, basically call or write to this address, because of course there was no internet.
Yeah.
And so I got a brochure. I still have the brochure. Because I don't throw anything away. And the brochure had all of these different apartments and houses, and we rented an apartment, and it was for the month of August, and it was $800 for both of us. And it had like two bedrooms. It was incredible.
Wow.
View of the sea.
How independent of you though, also at such a young age, to kind of have that, you know, wherewithal to kind of make that come to fruition.
I think I was very determined.
Yeah.
That I needed to like create the person. I just needed to make the life that, like, it wasn't going to be made for me. So I just needed to like manifest what I wanted.
Yeah.
So we spent this month there, and it was incredible. That was my first place I like deeply fell in love with.
How would you spend your days while you were there?
So we would basically go to the beach, and there were these two beaches. There was one called Paradise and one called Super Paradise. And you would like take a bus to a port that then was where like the water taxis would take you. And then we would just sleep all day on the beach. And then we would go back to our apartment, eat tomato sandwiches because we couldn't afford to go to restaurants.
Yeah.
And then we would go out and we didn't.
I bet
we
the tomatoes tasted really good as well. Because they're grown on the island.
And, exactly. Yeah. And then we would go out and we would just walk around and go to clubs and bars and whatnot. But like we weren't drinking because, again, we were broke. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody would buy us a drink, but it was just like the point of it was more about connecting and watching and seeing the way people lived or how they partied or whatever, how they vacationed and holidayed. And that was really like we were more observers and we would, it's not like today where if I were to go back, we would be in the restaurants. Like we were just really kind of like young women, flies on the wall, like looking in. And it really was like, for me, it was this kind of perfect island that accepted everyone. Yeah. And it didn't feel actually, I probably didn't know that it didn't feel Greek until the next place that I went. But, yeah. But like, it was, for me, it was just this place of like acceptance. And I just loved that.
Inclusivity, I suppose.
Yeah. Exactly. And we didn't even know those words then. You know, we were just like, it felt good that everybody was welcome.
Well, it sounds like a place where, you know, you kind of, it was like a coming of age experience. And
right.
Chapter 3 is the place where you learned the most about yourself, aside from Mykonos, which obviously was a bit of that. Where else comes to mind?
A week after Mykonos. Not even days after, I had signed up to go on this school program in this island of called Kalymnos, which is in the Dodecanese.
Oh, wow.
And
Kalymnos?
Kalymnos. So Kalymnos, it's K-A-L-Y-M-N-O-S. It's famous. It's always been the most famous for it being the best place for sponges. So all the sponge divers come from there. But that's sort of, I think like now people who are rock climbers like going to Kalymnos, but that it's really off the beaten path. And especially so in 1986. But when I was, you know, this sort of young high school kid who was trying to find my way, I also taught piano. That's another side note in there. My dad taught me how to teach piano, which is also how I afforded to go and do these trips because my parents were not.
Side note.
Yeah, exactly. And so I, one of my piano students' parents said to me, "So where are you planning to go to university?" And being that that wasn't like a big focus of my parents and that I was sort of more like, trying to find, I just was like, I'm just trying to figure out who I am and where I'm going. Like being a great student wasn't like a really big priority for me. Mm-hmm. So I had gotten into like some state universities, but they weren't like the school that I really wanted to go to. And I really had fantasies that were very lofty and that I hadn't really applied myself enough to get into them. So one of these students' parents said to me, like, you know, we just met these people who have this program in Greece, and it seems very up your street. Like, why don't you just look at this brochure? And it was the program was called Ithaca. It was a four-month cultural immersion program that only took 12 kids. And so I went and I met the founders, and I applied and I got in. So going from Mykonos, I basically ended there and then went to Athens to meet the group. And then we all ended up in Kalymnos. And the minute I got to Kalymnos, and I had fantasies that it was going to be a continuation of my like party at night, swim and beach all day, like my great fantasy of my great Greek life. And the minute I got there, they sort of had all the kids at this cafe, and this old woman had a little bowl of water and some basil. And she like took the basil, dipped it in the water and like put it on my head. And then she was anointing us with Greek names so that we would actually like integrate into the culture, not just be like, you know, hi, Yolanda, which is not a Greek name. Yeah. So I was named Artemis, and everybody else got their Greek name.
Beautiful name to get.
It was a great name. And then I worked, we all had different jobs. So none of us were banded together. We had to like work in a place where it was just us, which meant often that we had to learn Greek quite quickly because nobody there spoke English. So I worked in a bakery and no one spoke English. And we'd work from 8 till 12 and then come back for lunch and do our studies and then have class from 4 until 8. There was barely a minute to go to a beach. The beaches were rocky anyway. And so it's, and it was like cold showers and bunk beds, and there was none of the life of what I had at Mykonos. And in the beginning I was like, what am I doing? I'm on this like barren rock and I have a new name, and I just like, what is going on here? And it was really hard. Like, we all read the Odyssey, and then our teacher, the founder of the program, was asked us all to talk about, well, what did the Odyssey mean? He was like, you didn't get it. Read it again. So it was very draconian kind of program. And in the end, I became like a different person. Like the founder, this guy, Nick, he sat me down and he was like, you have a lot of potential, but you're so caught up with chasing this lifestyle. And you just need to learn. You need to get smart first. Like, you have to go to school. He basically like really parented me and said, I want you to read the New York Times cover to cover every day. Like, you know, and I want you to read certain books. And basically he was an incredible influence on me. And I ended up majoring in comparative literature and going to Berkeley, and modern Greek was my language, and I still speak Greek. And like, it was amazing. This point where I kind of went from being like floundering and just like trying to kind of patchwork, make my life something based on the way other people's lives were. And he helped me sort of find this like, okay, you can create a foundation. Let's make a foundation that's solid. And then you can go and add those things onto it. But otherwise, it's going to be empty if you don't have a solid base to start to begin from.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Like you say, I've kind of built the building blocks for then your you know, future career. And it was interesting when you were talking actually about Mykonos and the light and how, you know, that is what really stands out, stood out in your experience of it when you were first experiencing Greece. And it made me think, of course, about, you know, your work as a creative director and how things like that, the way the light hits a wall,
right,
can be the source of inspiration for a huge feature or a, you know, a magazine cover.
Right.
So kind of fast forwarding on then, really fast forwarding on to the times of, you know, YOLO Journal and right, the conception of that. Can you explain to my listeners who might not, you know, be familiar with the trajectory, how that came about and what was your inspiration behind it?
So YOLO Journal came about, it started actually like, In the late 90s, when I met my husband, I was living in California. He was in New York, and he really wanted me to find a job that could bring me to New York. And there was a freelance position available at Condé Nast Traveler. And so I worked there. I was doing someone's maternity leave. So I was there for 3 months and I was helping like put together photo shoots. And back in the 90s, when the way that photographers would go and actually kind of evolve their career by getting magazine assignments is they would have to bring their portfolios and have meetings with the photo editors at the magazines. Or mm-hmm. they would have to ship them, which would be so costly because they were these giant, huge books, yeah. leather bound and big cases. Yeah. And so often people would just be like, I'm in town and can we please have a meeting? Nobody in the photo team really had the time. And so they would put me onto it. So I would go and sit with these photographers and I never studied photography. And so I didn't really know what to say. So I would just look at the pictures and say like, oh, this is so beautiful. Where's this? And where's that? And tell me about this and just engage them about the content itself. And I learned so much from them. And sometimes their pictures weren't even great, but like their stories were incredible. Or sometimes they were great at both. And then I would go from there into meetings where the editors were talking about stories that we needed to get photographed. And often it would be like some new hotel that was not even open yet. It was going to open by the time the publication came out. And nobody had been because it was a construction site. And I was like, there's something weird here. There's this yeah. disconnect about we have people coming with photographs that are already taken. They already exist. They would kill to have them in our magazine. And their stories about it are real. And then here we are like spending a lot of money to have somebody go photograph something and write about something that they've never, like the writer hasn't even been there. So I really have this issue with this disconnect of like mm-hmm. chasing the new instead of writing about like what is actually good.
Yeah.
So fast forward, I was there for a couple of years and then I went and was at many other different magazines. And I was always on the photo side of things. So I was basically meeting with photographers. And then I sort of really realized like, that's what I want to do. I want to write about travel. And so then we ended up at Condé Nast Traveler again in this time from in 2013. And at that point, I went there as the creative director. And the mandate was that we really had to change the entire feeling of it. And we had a very sliced budget. So we had to do things on a shoestring. Mm-hmm. So when in 2018, they shifted the management of Traveler over to the UK office, and I lost my job. I was sort of like, I don't know what to do. I mean, I luckily had a consulting job. So I wasn't like, I didn't have to go find a real new job. And also there weren't really any new real jobs that were comparable to what I was doing. So yeah. I thought I'll just do this consulting and I'm going to try and do this travel magazine that I always wanted to do and that I've been thinking about since 1997. And so the idea was like, rather than assigning, I'm going to do this kind of upcycling of stories from photographers that I think have an incredible point of view. And, you know, they've actually been there and we'll get the download mm-hmm. from them. And some of them are already good writers and some are just, they're good storytellers that we can shape the writing. So that was really the beginning of YOLO Journal, the print. And for 2 years, I just did print. And 2 years ago, I started the newsletter. And so that's a weekly thing where I basically also am curating other people's points of view. Like I'll say, okay, I was just in Marrakesh and I had an incredible trip.
It's more like an itinerary, like detail focus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So it's like a really cool accompaniment to the magazine.
Exactly.
Because you're getting both sides.
Yeah.
Well, so we move on then, Yolanda, to chapter 4, and that is the big one, your all-time favorite destination. Where would you pick today?
It is very hard. I'm torn between France, Italy, and Greece.
All good picks.
All good picks. I'm just going to go with like my first instinct is where we are in the Médoc in France. There's nothing to do there. I get on a bike. I don't go. I pass nothing except for vineyards. I bring my flower cutters with me. I fill my basket with flowers from, you know, the side of the road. And then I like, you know, maybe we'll go for lunch at the beach and like have a very simple lunch of razor clams and rosé and whatever is, you know, some very simple thing. And it's just, there's literally nothing to do except for these kind of very simple actions of like walking on the beach, riding a bike, taking walks. So that is really like, for me, that kind of happy place is of the being able to really slow down and the simplicity, and there not being a load of people around that I have to think about navigating.
What about, what's your favorite hotel? Do you have one?
Favorite hotel? I would say, I mean, this again is like, it's one of those like hard, I just have to always go with the gut. And it is the Pelicano.
Really? Okay, so Il Pelicano is a really famous hotel that is on the coast of Tuscany in Italy.
And so much of that, like, I'm going to caveat because there are so many I'm leaving out. But I think so much of it is back to the, like, feeling of, like, coming home. And I think that is because I'm very close. I started in 2015 going to the Pelicano just to write about it for Traveler, and then became friends with Marie Louise, and then Federico, the bartender, and then so on and so on. And then, so you go there and you just get the bear hugs like you just don't get from anywhere else. And that feeling of going to a place that is just so iconic, and then also having that very family feeling is, that's a very personal thing for me. I think for many people, that wouldn't be their experience because they haven't been going there and developing that friendship. So I feel like there are many of those other places that I just adore the people. I mean, this is the great thing about being a travel editor. We're not just showing up as guests. We're showing up having conversations with the people who run it and really getting to know them and really bonding with them or not. But, you know, the ones we bond with, we want to see them again and again.
I saw that you were just recently at La Colombe d'Or in Saint-Paul-de-Vence in France. And from what I understand, people have a similar relationship to that hotel.
Love, love. I mean, that is one of those. It was only my second time, but I would say my husband and I were like, let's just book it every winter. Just one night. It's like the most transporting place. The restaurant is incredible. You don't need to go there in the summer when it's impossible to get into. Like you really just, it's kind of great to be in that dining room filled with all the great art. And you wouldn't be in that room if it was a summer, you'd be out in the garden. So I'm a big
totally different experience.
Yeah.
Well, those were some great recommendations. We move on to chapter 5, and that is your hidden gem. That is a place that you love that maybe my listeners wouldn't know so much about.
Hidden gem. Okay, I swear I'm not on the I'm not an ambassador for the Médoc, but the Médoc is hidden gem. That is definitely what it is. It is, everybody knows Bordeaux and everybody knows the wines of Bordeaux, but like people kind of don't really think about what's above Bordeaux. And it's this peninsula that, you know, maybe people go as far as Margaux, or maybe they know that Lafitte is in Médoc, but they, I think that people know so much the brands that come from that area that they don't really like, or maybe they see like Haute Médoc on their wine label, but it doesn't really penetrate. Because there aren't really big grand hotels that are around that area, often people will just stay in Bordeaux and do a little wine tour up, and that's it. That's their only idea of what it is. What they don't know is that they're the most beautiful beaches, that it's Atlantic beaches. People might know Cap Ferret and know it as this sort of like insider place that like a lot of Parisians go. And I love Cap Ferret, but it's very expensive. It's sort of like the Hamptons of the area. It's really hard to get to. Lots of traffic because it's single lane. In the summer, it's magical, but it's very crowded. So I'm really would encourage people to have a look at Médoc. I think that there are all of these new little inns that are opening up. A lot of, during the pandemic, you did see a lot of younger people who realized like the prices were great down there and that they could open something up. And like, I think there's a lot of really special things going on. There are little fisherman's shacks, the best oysters you've ever had. The prices are incredible. So,
oh yeah, amazing. I'm sold, absolutely sold. How would you get there from the UK?
So you can fly nonstop into Bordeaux. And then I would say to rent a car. If you're somebody who doesn't drive, then if you don't drive, I would say you should take the train to Soulac. Soulac is this little seaside town. And if you don't drive, that's the one place that you could really go and just have this beautiful little beach holiday without ever stepping foot in a car. And there's like really good things happening there. Like this woman who we met who used to be at like a very trendy bakery in Paris, she moved there, opened up an amazing bakery. So like there's stuff happening.
If you're somebody, such a great hidden gem. It's great. It.
And then if you actually are somebody who likes to drive, I think that that's the best way, because then you can sort of go from, you can do vineyards and you can do the sea, and that's really incredible. And then I would say, you know, you could definitely do a loop where you go fly into Bordeaux. If it's not a weekend, go over to Cap Ferret, check it out. Go head up towards, there's many places I would recommend, but like Lynch Bage has if you're a 5-star person, they have a Relais and Chateau. They also have a 3-star that's called Orme de Pez. That's beautiful. And then there are a bunch of these little guest houses that I have in one of my newsletters. So if you just like look at Yellow Journal and Médoc, you'll find it.
Sounds like the perfect summer vacation.
We need to get you there.
100%. Well, our penultimate chapter is chapter 6, and that is the place that you'd never go back to or your worst travel experience.
God, I should have asked my husband what's been a terrible thing that we've stayed at.
You'd never go back to? Would you ever put yourself out there and say a place that you really didn't like?
I probably will never go back to Tulum.
Interesting.
It's such
a hit or miss place, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and I could be wrong. It's been a long time since I've been there, but we used to go to Tulum when we were really young, and it was like the late 90s. We spent the millennium there, and it was just like, there weren't that many places to stay. You would run into New Yorkers there, but it wasn't that. You know, much of a destination. And now when I hear people talk about it, they're like, it's just really not great. Like it's more like bachelorette party, that kind of scene. If I'm going to go out of my way, I'm not going to go for a beach vacation down there when all I hear is like overcrowded, so expensive. What's the point? Oh, yeah. Another hidden gem. Sorry. Genoa. Genoa is another hidden gem.
Oh, yeah. You stayed in an amazing looking hotel.
Yeah, the Palazzo Durazzo. Incredible.
Great name.
The most beautifully redone. I mean, incredible. And that town is just, I loved it. I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think of some place that I really have had a bad experience. And I think I probably am so determined to find the way to turn it around that I'm certainly not remembering anything right now. So I probably just like washed it out of my brain.
Well, I have just absolutely loved chatting to you, Landa, about all of the destinations that have shaped your life. Our final chapter is chapter 7. And that is a destination that's at the top of your travel bucket list. So where is left for you to discover that you would love to go to?
India. Can you believe I've never been to India? I'm just determined to like plan the most epic like 3-week adventure there.
Awesome. Oh, I hope that you make it there soon.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Yolanda Edwards. Those were your travel diaries.
Thank you.
Oh, well, a huge thank you to Yolanda for joining me on the podcast. I really enjoyed that conversation. When it comes to someone with such a broad understanding and knowledge of travel, I could just chat for hours. Her hidden gem road trip around the Medoc region of France, an area that I never considered for a trip, and I'm definitely going to add that to my future travels, I hope. That sounded absolutely fantastic. And make sure that you pick up a copy of YOLO Journal when you can. It's a beautiful magazine. And also remember the newsletter, which I mentioned in the intro, is a fantastic detail-orientated travel guide that hits your inbox every week and is a great resource for travel lovers. You can also find the magazine on Instagram at YOLO Journal. Thanks so much for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe, or if you use Apple Podcasts, to press follow so that a new episode lands in your podcast app each week. If you want to be the first to find out who is joining me on next week's episode, come and follow me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and you'll also find me on Threads and TikTok. I'd love to hear from you. And if you can't wait till then, remember there's the first 10 seasons to catch up on. That's over 115 episodes to keep you busy there. Don't forget that all the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app and listed on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Thanks again, everyone. Take care, and I'll be back next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.